Thank you for your attention. As I met most of you, I'm Dan Gibbons from the City Club of Chicago. On behalf of our Board of Governors, welcome and welcome back to the City Club of Chicago. This is officially our last program before the holiday season. And we of course, share with you and all your families holiday greetings over the next few weeks. We're not going to be taking much of a break. We're really going to be gearing up for January here at City Club. So check out our website. I think you're going to find something there that you like. And we'll hope to see you often in January and beyond, as we've got some really exciting programs coming up. So thank you for being here today. You know, we always want to especially thank our sponsors. And today we have two of them with us. The Chicago Federation of Labor is here. Thank you to the CFL. And we understand they're pretty busy these days. A lot going on there. And then also the Chicago Board of Elections Commission. Thank you. We have Commissioners Maricel Hernandez. Thank you. Commissioner June Brown is here. And Commissioner Laura Coleman is here. Codeman is here. Max Bever, your whole team, thank you guys for all that you do to ensure that we are doing it right in Chicago and a national model for elections, as we should be, the second city to none. So thank you for those efforts. Thank you for being here today and for being part of future conversations that Max and I have talked about. We look forward to that. We have State Rep Maurice West is here, and we're going to hear from him on the panel. Theodos Pace is here from the NAACP, Illinois State President. We're going to hear from him, as well as Carolina Lopez, the Executive Director of the Partnership for Large Election Jurisdictions. Let's see, Darius Hillman I saw from CAN-TV. Adele Simmons is here. Thank you, Adele. Jackie Robinson Ivy, ladies and gentlemen, just on cue. Our former board chair here at the City Club. Just a great group of people, public servants, business leaders, civic leaders. Karen Freeman Wilson is here. I always call her mayor, attorney general, madam president of the we appreciate every role that Karen Freeman Wilson plays and has played, and she's a great friend to the City Club in her current position as the Urban League president. So thank you, Madam Mayor. Christina Rice is here. Where is Christina? Christina Rice. We always appreciate. So Christina's doing great things with Global Girls. We always appreciate using City Club to find the next generation of leaders and help lift up what they're doing. And perhaps she's a future Karen Freeman Wilson. But Christina's doing amazing things, and we appreciate that she comes here to City Club to grow her network and continue all the good that she's doing. And please, folks, bring those people, bring those ideas to me, to us, to our team. Jackie's here, our team's outside. We thrive off of your ideas. Today's panel is a result of that. We want you to bring folks that want to be here, that want to be growing their networks in the right way and moving Chicago forward, and I mean that. So please, let us know when you've got ideas or when you have people like some of the folks I just mentioned that should be in the room. We want to get them here, and we want to make this all your club to help further your missions and move Chicago forward. So thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for being here today. I am now honored to, I mentioned our panelists, but I'm going to turn this over to our partner. And while she's moderating today, she's our partner in this. And Kelly, where's Kelly? Kelly Merrick, thank you, Kelly. Helped think this through and bring this to our attention. But of course, who's going to take the stage here and introduce our panelist is another great friend of mine and of the City Club. And I'm honored to introduce Cook County Clerk Monica Gordon. She was sworn in last December. Clerk Gordon used to be Commissioner Gordon, which we always love. She leads one of the nation's largest consolidated clerk's office, and this is big, and you're going to hear more about it. Sometimes under the radar, right? Serves as the chief election authority for suburban Cook County, overseeing vital records, managing essential public records. She's served as a Cook County commissioner, as I mentioned, Commissioner Gordon, and a clear focus on access, service, and effective local government. Please join me in welcoming back to the City Club, Clerk Monica Gordon. Thank you, Clerk. I'll help you step up here.
Thank you.
Okay.
So I'll read from here.
Yeah, that's fine. And then you can sit.
Good afternoon, everyone. And thank you to the City Club of Chicago for hosting this vital conversation about safeguarding our elections and protecting voting rights. I'm honored to join this distinguished panel and help open today's discussion. For those who I have not met, I'm Monica Gordon, the clerk of Cook County. When I was sworn into office 1 year ago, I became the youngest woman and just the third African American to serve as the Cook County clerk. I love my job, and I consider myself extremely blessed to serve the residents of Cook County in this capacity. As clerk, I oversee one of the largest consolidated clerk's offices in the nation, and our responsibilities are wide-ranging. I also serve as the chief election authority for suburban Cook County, and I manage all the vital records, from birth and marriages to death certificates. My office also records and protects all land records and official documents for Cook County. In many ways, we serve residents at every major milestone of life, from the cradle to the grave. And as the administrator of the largest election jurisdiction in Illinois, I can't imagine a more important moment for this conversation. We gather today at a time when the integrity, accessibility, and transparency of our election systems face unprecedented challenges. Our democracy thrives or falters on the simple but essential principle that every eligible voice is heard and every eligible vote is treated with dignity and fairness. In suburban Cook County, we serve millions of voters across hundreds of municipalities and townships. We manage thousands of Election Day workers, hundreds of polling places, precincts, mail-in ballots, and early voting sites, all under the close watch of a public that demands and deserves certainty and trust. That's why our work must be as much about process as it is about outcome. Today, I want to share these three core commitments that guide the administration of elections in the clerk's office. These are not just abstract goals. They are concrete priorities. The first is access. We believe that participation in our democratic process should not be a hurdle. It should be an open invitation. Whether someone is casting a ballot in person or by mail, registering for the first time, or simply updating their voter information, the experience should be simple and reliable. My team continuously works to modernize our systems, expand hours and locations for early voting, and ensure multilingual support and robust outreach. When we remove obstacles, we strengthen the promise of our democracy. The second priority is integrity. Access means very little if the system itself is doubted. Ensuring that our elections are secure, audited, transparent, and professionally run is non-negotiable. That also means protecting our voters and our election workers from any improper outside pressure, including federal interference that seeks to intimidate voters at the polls and disrupt our processes. In suburban Cook County, our polling places are governed by state law, administered by local election authorities and staffed by trained election judges and polling place technicians whose job is to uphold fairness and order. My office has made it clear that no agency, federal or otherwise, may intervene in a way that compromises voter privacy, voter confidence, or the peaceful administration of our elections. Whether someone is voting early, voting by mail, or stepping into the polling place on election day, they will do so free from intimidation, free from surveillance, and free from interference. That is a promise, and a responsibility I take seriously. Now, the third commitment is equity and trust. I grew up on the west side of Chicago, and I know for and I know for millions of residents, there has been a legacy of feeling unseen or unheard. As clerk and as a Cook County commissioner before that, I have pledged to operate a system that sees every community, sees every neighborhood, and ensures that historically underrepresented districts and areas do not translate into modern disenfranchisement. Democracy is strongest when it reflects all of our communities and when every resident knows that their story matters and their voice counts. As our panelists will discuss today, the threats to our system are real. We are dealing with voter suppression efforts, disinformation, sophisticated cybersecurity threats, declining confidence in institutions, and structural barriers that disproportionately impact the most vulnerable. The fact that those threats exist does not mean we are powerless. It just amplifies our responsibility. In my office, we've taken tangible steps such as expanding early voting sites in underserved neighborhoods, strengthening partnerships with community-based organizations, and increasing transparency around the processes. I believe that the question we should ask ourselves today is not simply, how do we defend elections, but rather, how do we advance elections, make them more accessible, more inclusive, more trusted, and more resilient? Let me close with this. The heart of our democracy is the belief that government exists because of its people, shaped by their voices and strengthened by their participation. But that promise is only meaningful if people participate and if institutions earn their trust. At the clerk's office, every envelope received, every signature verified, every voter checked in at a polling site is an affirmation that our system still works, that our voices still matter, and that our rights still stand. Thank you for your time, your partnership in this vital work, and your trust in the process ahead. I look forward to our conversation, and I'm grateful for your engagement in safeguarding our democracy together. Thank you. And so I want to welcome each panelist to the table. And I will start with my good friend, Carolina Lopez, who's the executive director. Who's the executive director for the Partnership for Large Elections in, Large Election Jurisdictions, which we call PLEDGE. Next, I want to invite up to the panel one of my mentors, Karen Freeman Wilson, President and CEO of Chicago Urban League and former mayor of Gary, Indiana. And I had the pleasure of meeting this young man years ago, and he's just excelled in his work. I want to next introduce Theodis Pace, president of Illinois State Conference of the NAACP. Now, when I was in Springfield and I worked for the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus Foundation, I had the opportunity to meet this young man, representative from Rockford, Representative Maurice West, Illinois Assistant Majority Leader, Chair of House Ethics and Elections Committee. So I'll start with you, Carolina. So, Carolina, you've worked inside one of the country's largest and most complex elections jurisdictions in Miami-Dade, and now you support major jurisdictions nationwide through PLEDGE. From your vantage point, what is the single biggest blind spot the public has about what it really takes to run large-scale elections securely and accessibly?
It's such a great question, and I want to clarify that I came after 2000. Just kidding. But, you know, part of the joke is, you know, there used to be a time where the most difficult thing was, is it 529 votes that separates one presidential candidate and the other? Will the recount be allowed? Will political apparatus allow the elections office to finish? Those used to be the problems back then. 25, 26 years later, I tell people that I think the blind spot is not technology. It's not whether equipment is going to be hacked. It's not whether some magical foreign entity is going to change my political affiliation, right? It's a people and process problem, right? Just to give you some context, Miami-Dade County has 1.6 million, right? Much like Cook County and you know, the top 10 counties in the country. You start planning as early as 4 years before this big day. And you might think I'm a little crazy when I say this, but planning elections is kind of like putting a Taylor Swift or a Beyonce concert. You think I'm crazy, right? But it requires, you know, setting the venues, right? Pricing the tickets. Who can enter? What time? How much electricity do we need? How do we get security? How do we get lighting? How do we get the change on the costumes, right? Like 1,000 people. And I get it, putting a Beyonce concert is a little sexier than elections, and we're working on that. But it's still, your reputation is on the line based on thousands of seasonal employees that they out of the goodness of their heart, come and help you do polling place surveys and set up your polling places on election day. Hopefully they remember to show up on time so we can open on time. The rovers, monitoring your equipment, poll workers, right? Like, it's just like your reputation and everything that you've been doing, and you're only as good as the last election that you did, is largely based on people that you don't control. They're not your permanent staff, right? And so I just want to remind folks that that's the biggest blind spot. Clerk Gordon and her team, City of Chicago, all these individuals are planning and putting plans after plan, not just for running elections, but what happens if there's an ICE raid during early voting? What happens if there is a bad faith actor impeding progress to your building, right? Like, these are all new situations that I promise you, back in 2000, Florida wasn't planning on, right? So this year and every year, you add another chief. You're the chief operations officer, the chief executive officer, the chief morale officer for your team, the chief logistics, chief legal. Like, there's so many chiefs, right? And so, again, if anything in that process breaks down outside of your control, there's one face that you have to give and you have to resolve, right? So I think that's the biggest blind spot, that even though you see that elections official's face on all the flyers on the website, there's a multitude of people behind them. And they're responsible for making sure everything moves like clockwork every single day. And so that's what I think.
Thank you, Carolina. Speaking of teams, I definitely want to recognize my team that is here because I could not do this without them. Thank you so much for your hard work. Thank you. And in addition, I want to recognize the Chicago Board of Elections. Thank you so much for coming here today. And I want to also recognize this all-women board we have here tonight. So, President Freeman Wilson, your leadership spans civil rights, government, the law, and national nonprofit advocacy. When you look at today's voting rights landscape, what is the most persistent barrier that Black communities still face? And what responsibility do election authorities and civic organizations share in dismantling it?
So, first, I want to thank you and Dan for reminding people that I can't keep a job. You all are my friends, but, you know, in all seriousness, I want to thank you for your leadership and really for the invitation to join the panel. Certainly appreciate City Club for having this as a subject matter. And these are a panel of experts. I could be out eating the cookies and coffee. But, you know, you asked about the persistent challenge and what is it that concerns me and what are we fighting about. And our biggest challenge is something, quite frankly, that we thought we had solved over 50 years ago.
Mm.
Yes. And that is the just the right to unimpeded access to the ballot. And we saw most recently in Indiana and Texas how there was an all-out assault on voting rights, and certainly we saw it in Louisiana, or the effort to address it in Louisiana before the Supreme Court. But there has been a consistent effort to turn laws that were designed really to help people gain access to all things, but in the case of the Voting Rights Act, to voting rights. And, you know, we thought that was secured. And so now we're going backwards in time. They are using the gerrymander purportedly for political advantage, but the veiled effort is to create this racial advantage and to essentially discriminate on the basis of political advantage. And that is something that we have to fight. We certainly have to fight it by addressing the venue that those issues are in, namely the Supreme Court, the state courts, the state legislatures. You know, I was proud of my home state, you know, at least until the legislature. Yeah, give them a hand because they go back in the session on January 5th, and you don't know what's going to happen, but at least they got it right, and got it right by a wide margin. But in addition to that, I think the real opportunity that these efforts present is the effort to mobilize people in states that are not as secure as Illinois, to mobilize people in Texas and Indiana and other places where they are counting on gerrymandering to really suppress the vote and to help people address those suppression efforts. If they say you have to have an ID, make sure people have the IDs. If they say you can't bring water, work around that. If they say, you know, if they have all of these punitive laws, not only should we fight against those laws, but we need to help people route around those laws. So I think it's a dual effort.
And thank you so much, Madam President. And I know we spoke about gerrymandering, and that seems to be a partisan issue, right? But let me be clear. Voting rights and election security is a bipartisan issue.
That's right.
And Indiana showed that. They showed that, and as Madam President stated, that makes me very hopeful and optimistic for, you know, doing what we need to do. So, Mr. Theodis Pace, Mr. President.
That's it.
Mr. President.
What can you say?
You've spent nearly three decades leading the NAACP in Kankakee County and now across the state. What trends are you seeing on the ground that signal new forms of voter suppression? Not always explicit, but just as harmful, especially in smaller or rural communities.
I want to thank Clerk Gordon and also the City Club for this opportunity on behalf of officers and members of the NAACP Illinois State Conference of Branches. Every day, this legacy organization, which is 116 years old, and in the state of Illinois, we are actually 88 years old. So some of the things that we're facing daily is also things that our president, CEO Derrick Johnson, and as civil rights fighters and advocates, we have not faced this before. It's new. So what is the new game plan? The clerk mentioned earlier in her statement of misinformation. Then it is the administrative hurdles that our rural communities have, access to polling places, lack of funding in respective jurisdiction, even here in the great state of Illinois, and we are blue state. We have over 32 branches of the NAACP in the state of Illinois. So we are faced with the polling places, the lack of funding, and one of the things that I've been trying to do with our respective branch presidents is to establish the relationship. I know every county elected official in Kankakee County by name, on speed dial, and you have to have those relationships.
That's right.
And if you don't have those relationships, when you have that issue regarding a polling place or lack of funding, or you might not have the respective number of polling judges and things of that nature. So these days, it's new on how in our rural community, I would say, how they are impacted in a negative way, where in the southern parts of the state, it is around those racial barriers that, and again, whether I'm a Republican and a Democrat, the NAACP, we're nonpartisan, but at the same time, we're political as hell. But the bottom line is, how do we register individuals to vote and get them beyond those respective hurdles? All right. In our office at 657 East Court Street, our political action committee and other offices, we have the accessibility of looking at any and every voter, a non-voter, whether a person voted in the 04 election or this past 2024. The VAN, the Voter Activation Network, we can actually look at up and down any street, any house, and see who's registered to vote. And so, in a way, it have taken away some of the explicit negative part, but I would say that it's the shortage of the election judges and the polling places that we have to face with. I was on a national call yesterday. Is the question, we are already gearing up for November 2026. And it's a lot of work, and we're going to meet the challenge. We will meet the challenge, but we have to continue to deal with the respective hurdles. And I maintain it's about the relationship that you have to have with your respective elected officials.
Sure.
Thank you. And for Representative Maurice West, you oversee both the Ethics and Elections Committee and work across criminal justice, housing, and executive policy. What do you believe is the number one legislative reform Illinois should prioritize to safeguard elections over the next decade?
Well, first, Clerk Gordon, thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm a true downstater, so I'm just tickled pink that I'm over here with hanging with y'all here in Chicago. I'm hailing from Rockford, Illinois, about 90 miles northwest from here, and so I'm excited to be here with all of you. Thank you so much for the question. I've been the Ethics and Elections Chair since 2023. As you know, state reps have 2-year terms, so this is my second term as the chair. And it's one of the few committees in under the dome that operates differently from the others. We can be as political as we want to be in other committees. If we have enough Democrats, we're going to get that bill passed because it's what the values of the party that's in the majority under the dome. However, ethics and elections is none of it's political, as we've talked about. It's purely operational. We need to ensure our elections are working. And so it's imperative that as chair, I don't really control what bills come my way. I can facilitate them. I can put conversation towards ideas. But then we have to ensure that the House, the Senate, and the governor is in lockstep with the bills that will be coming to the floor. So before a bill is before I present a bill to my members, I already know that I have the votes in the House. I already know I have the votes in the Senate, and I already know that the governor is going to sign it because it's purely operational. We can't play games, political games, with elections. We can't play political games with ethics. And so, going to your question, I just want to make sure you knew how things operated. Going to your question, of course, I have ideas of what legislative priorities should take place, but I need to make sure I'm in lockstep with our clerks. I need to make sure I'm in lockstep with our election authorities, because here in the state of Illinois, based on what we've seen in 2020 when everything was about Stop the Steal, and we heard a lot from Secretary of States who serve as the chief election officer of that state, we don't have that here in Illinois. We have 108 different election office leaders throughout the state. Clerk Gordon is one of them. Chicago Board of Elections is another. And so it's imperative that that legislation is in lockstep, ensuring that we can administer the things that we're trying to pass under the dome. So when you ask the question, what I feel needs to happen, I caveat that with saying, after talking with the clerks, after talking with Chicago Board of Elections, an idea that I'm thinking that we need to go move forward with is increasing our transparency as technology is advancing. To this day, when I first came in, the one thing that scared me, I ain't gonna lie, artificial intelligence, deepfakes. You remember how they had a voice of President Biden saying, hey, don't forget election day on Wednesday. When is it ever on Wednesday? Right? But it was a way to keep people from coming out. And so here in Illinois, we have yet to pass a bill that's focused around regulating deepfakes. That worries me as a legislator. That worries me as a black man. Because I'm a candidate. I just got sworn in January. I'm already on the ballot again, and it's only December. And so I'm constantly thinking politically. And if I don't know if you guys keep up with Law and Order SVU, they had this idea, the show which the teacher had an artificial image, a deceptive image of him with a student. Yeah. Even though it was untrue, he had to resign. Mm-hmm. That is fretful to me. And so we have to ensure, one, we are taking care of regulating deepfakes, ensuring that if you see something on social media, there's something on there that says this is an artificially intelligent image. This is something that was derived from AI. Because elections have been politicized for these past 5 years, again, Stop the Steal crap that we heard in 2020, it's still residue in 2022, 2024, and I'm scared of what's going to happen, honestly, in 2026 with the current person in office and the federal side. We need to ensure that we value transparency even the more once the dust settles on this current administration. One way to do that is audits after the results come out. So we say, well, Maurice wins, and then they say, all right, we're going to do an audit real quick to verify that Wes really won. It's something that's very economically feasible for election authorities and clerks, but again, that's an idea that I need to vet with the association, clerk association, with election authorities before we go down that road. But transparency is key for the next 10 years.
Thank you so much, Representative West. So we'll go back to my friend, Carolina Lopez. Carolina, you spent years strengthening national, state, and local coalitions. How can jurisdictions like Cook County build interjurisdictional alliances that improve security, operations, and voter confidence, especially when states have vastly different political climates?
That's such a great question, so perfectly timed. If I was answering this question a year ago, the response would have been a little different. But today we have less federal support, whether it's FEMA, right? I come from Florida where there's a hurricane every year, right? So my biggest fear is, what if there's a next Hurricane Katrina? Or what if there is a snowstorm that takes out? What if there's, wild flooding, right? But there's also a reduction in services in CISA, which is cybersecurity. There used to be a federal network where you can get Albert sensors pretty much saying, hey, carolina@russia.com just sent an email. Don't open that. That is a phishing attempt, right? Those networks have been gutted, as much as 80 and 90%. And so this is where partnerships really, really, really matter. Not just in messaging, right? We share media markets. So when City of Chicago and Cook County are talking about early voting, right, I'm sure calls come forward where they're like, wait, does early voting start Monday or does it start Friday? Mm. Right? People in Alabama are getting the Atlanta metro region messaging, right? And so then again, if you're in Alabama and early voting starts a week later, your office is frustrated because there's inherently misinformation, and that's not even a bad faith actor. It's just we share a media market. So in today's day and age, with less federal support, less structural support, I'm going to say it, and this is going to be very unpopular, but in the large cities across the country, you're starting to see homes last longer in the real estate market. And for those of you that were in government in 2008, that meant that people were foreclosing their homes. And if you're foreclosing your homes, you're not paying your taxes. If you're not paying your taxes, your general fund is going down. And in my county, we had to lay off 20% of staff. May I remind you that 2008 was the first year that a certain Barack Obama was on the ballot. And there was early voting lines of 5 hours. So the headline was early voting delays in Miami-Dade County, not the county lost 20% staff. The county could not use other facilities. The count, like, those were not the headlines. It was like, tough noogies, you guys planned poorly. So going back to your question about, you know, how are partnerships important? They're more important than ever, right? We now share with each other. We've created these structures like Pledge, like other entities, right? Where we share, hey, this weird thing is happening. Hey, this weird public records request thing is happening that's jamming my staffing resources. So again, we need to share real time what's happening. We need to uplift real time what messaging works. So at Pledge, one of the things that we've developed in response to our members is let's get the communicators talking, right? I remember somebody in Hawaii saying, hey, you guys in the mainland, 2 years ago, you were dealing with these crazy public record requests challenging people. I'm just getting it. Does anybody have any bullet points? Right? And it just dawned on me, you're right. Like, we are, when you're a large county, when you're a top five county in the country, you're going to get it first. And your leadership sort of dictates how the rest of the country, how the rest of the other 10,000 election offices are going to respond. So there's a lot of responsibility. There's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of responsibility. And more so than ever before, we have to share with each other because, again, when there's a misstep, sometimes it's malicious. Sometimes it's just not enough resources. And the audience does not care when you say, I just didn't have enough money. They don't care, right? And that's not the job. The job is to have fair, accessible, an accurate election. So more than ever before, partnerships and sharing and aligned messaging is more important than ever before for public trust.
Thank you. Thank you. President Freeman Wilson, the Urban League focuses on economic empowerment as a pathway to civic engagement and empowerment. What connection do you see between economic inequity and voter suppression that policymakers still fail to address?
So I think that when people are struggling, we don't always take the opportunity to connect that struggle with the need for folks to be civically engaged. And sometimes it's hard to see past that. If I'm trying to feed a family, if I'm trying to keep a roof over their heads, it's hard for me if I've been working 10 hours and barely making it to think about, okay, well, when is election day? That's the last thing on my mind. Mm. But in the age of social media and easy access to information, even through text messaging, I think there is a way for us to connect that information that will really motivate people and galvanize people to vote. I think there's also an opportunity, you know, we work with the NAACP all the time. We're connected with the West Side branch and the South Side chapter. But we have to go beyond that and look at those entities that provide food stamps, right, and the food bank, and to look at other employment entities. Certainly we have workforce, but there are other entities that provide workforce. I see D from Thresholds. So to the people who are providing mental health support. Integrate civic engagement in every aspect of people's lives so that while I'm waiting for an appointment, while I'm engaged in workforce training, while I'm engaged in housing, counseling, somebody is telling me about the next election, why it's important to vote, how it all works together, because if that happens, then I'm going to realize that the reason that my food stamps got delayed wasn't because of the lady in the food stamp office.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was because of the person in the White House.
Hello.
Or the members of Congress who don't necessarily represent me. Let me make sure that I not only go, but I call my relatives in those states that are in play. Again, nonpartisan, this is civic engagement. To say you have to ensure that you know who stands for you and who is going to work in your best interest. That's self-preservation. That's not partisan politics.
Thank you. President Pace, as someone who has mentored youth and coached for nearly five decades, how do you think civic leaders can better engage young voters and first-time voters who distrust institutions, not just to register, but to stay engaged for life?
You know, I've coached football for 46 years. Former school administrator. And here with a legacy organization and a young man who grew up in the Jim Crow South. I've experienced those aspects of basically how do we address young individuals, because now, you know, high school principal, the young person that's 17, 18 years old, well, they don't see necessarily the value of to register and to vote. And as Mayor Karen just stated, we have to really go where these young peoples are.
That's right.
The other piece is that I view my football team, I don't see them not necessarily being disengaged. They're disengaged because we don't have the time or the effort to really explain the importance on why they should, one, register vote. And then, you know, because, I mean, I look at the numbers all the time. It's not the number of people that that are registered. It's the ones that we can get to the polls on election day. So I maintain with our young people, We have to go where they are. Then we also have to establish that relationship with them and to really cement in their mind the importance of voting. Well, why did the government shut down a month and a half ago? Why didn't your mom didn't have the food stamps? Why you wasn't able to get the necessary medication? So you're going to college in May of 2026. Are you having a scholarship? Are there necessary monies available? We have to take the time and really explain to them. Unlike myself, again, Jim Crow South, I saw the Klan. You know, I saw things that propel black people, the reason why it was important to vote. So here we are, state of Illinois. Is it important to vote? I think this past city election, what was it, 49.5% of the individuals who actually voted. And if we go back and look at this past November election, Brother Peppers, I was in the barbershop. Man, I had to tell the barber to, you know, if he could just, he got to button me down because I really want to engage in those conversations with these young people who indicated, well, I don't see the need to vote. Or better yet, they voting for someone else that's not in their best interest. So again, the NAACP, legacy organization, 116 years, we know what it takes to really truly understand civil engagement. And until we really truly understand what is the true meaning of civil engagement, it covers the household, mental health, your meds. And so until we sort of take the time, again, go to the schools, go to the rec centers, and really truly explain. But you know where it really starts? It starts at home and at churches. Are our churches really engaged in explaining to the respective members the importance that of Election Day? Are our pastors really selling it to the congregation? I want to say some other things, but I mean, truly, is it there? I know what my pastor back in the day, because he's marching, and he's going to make sure our vans are available on Election Day, so we're going to do the soul to the poll on Sunday. And so if we look at the resources that our clerks are providing, you know, we got the number of hours have been expanded, particularly here in Illinois. It's a little different. Texas, her home state in Indiana, you know. I'm a Hoosier also. This is my home girl. You know, so we see things a little different. And what really make me do the work with the NAACP, I've been a member as long as I could possibly remember of being the NAACP, because it is about the work. It is about me seeing Willie L. Pace, my father, driving me to the polls in Columbus, Georgia. My mom is from Montgomery, Alabama. I know the story of Rosa Parks. Will we ever have the intellect to propel another Montgomery boycott? Can we come together? That's something to think about. 300 some days, can we do that again to really show our voice? And in the black community, we have power that we don't really clearly understand that we have, and it's our voice. It's how we organize and we can engage. And so it's a continuation. And sometimes the old saying is, you know, I'm old school, but sometimes we have to add a new school flavor. And that's where we are here in going into next year's midterm election. For sure. Thank you.
Thank
Clerk,
you.
Clerk, can I interrupt here for a second? Yes. And just mention we have about 10 minutes. I know we might have a question or two in the audience, so if there's something you want to wrap with, and then maybe we can go to a question.
I could just ask, can I ask one last question?
You're in charge. You can do what you want. I just want to make sure, and also let some folks know, and especially this table here, if you have something you want to add to the conversation, we'd like to include that. So put your thinking caps on.
So we'll just do one last question, and we'll open it up to everyone.
Great.
So, Representative West, your personal leadership is rooted in faith and service as an ordained minister. How does that perspective shape your view of voting as a moral responsibility? And what do you think leaders can do to restore the idea that democracy itself requires shared faith and shared duty?
Yeah, thank you for that question. And I forgot to share with you, I'm a preaching politician. Y'all just gave me a microphone. So I promise I won't be long-winded since we only have 10 minutes. But it's very important for us. When I look at it from my vantage point, not only am I like in leadership when it comes to being in the House of Representatives, I'm a leader for the Democratic Party as a state center committeeman, and then I'm a preacher. I know for myself I have to be very strategic in the words that come out my mouth. I can't just grandstand like everybody else, because it reflects poorly on my calling as a preacher. But we don't see that too many times with those elected officials that we see today. I have colleagues who I've talked to, and I see them put some hateful rhetoric on their social media simply because their constituents love what they're saying. They don't believe it, but my people like it. I got to do what they got to do, what I got to do. We need leaders who would rather tell you what you need to hear than tell you what you may want to hear. That's what leadership is, not fuel the flame that is already part of the base. No, if my base is wrong, I'm going to tell you that you're wrong. And this is what we need to do. But we don't have that kind of leadership right now. I was loving what President Freeman Wilson was saying when it comes to civic engagement. I was thinking one thing we have to do is invest in our babies, ensuring that they know what civic engagement looks like. No matter if you don't celebrate, we all know what day is Christmas. No matter if you don't celebrate, we all know what day is Halloween and what day is Thanksgiving. No matter if you don't plan to vote, you should know what day is Election Day. No matter. And so we need to glorify Election Day just as much as we glorify these other holidays. Every year, I'm fighting tooth and nail under the dome to simply make Election Day a holiday permanently. They don't want to do that. They say, let's just do it annually. Let's just do it. Let's check the pulse for 2026. No, we're not going to do it this year. Election Day is not a holiday. Why not? Why aren't we closing our schools at one day so our babies will know the value of elections? Especially as President Pace was talking about the history that a lot of us have when it comes to our elections. Our ancestors dying so they can vote. And then I see a brother who said, man, I don't plan on voting this year. For what? Why? And so if we find ourselves as leaders in a position where we're saying the truth, we're focused on transparency, disclosing where we get the information, and we're sharing civic engagement to the point where it's something that is great for our communities, then we will find ourselves in a better position. One provision that I have in the bill that's coming up in 2026, when our babies go to the DMV all excited to get their driver's license, oh, by the way, you're going to be registered to vote, too, while you're here.
That's right.
You don't, we're not going to ask you if you want to register to vote. We're going to register you because it's your civic duty. And so once we get to that point, it's not going to just take today and it'll be answered tomorrow. It's an investment that we have to make now so that we can see the change that we need when it comes to what people are viewing when our elections.
100%.
I think we have a few minutes. Do we have any questions? And again, I was looking at the Chicago Board of Elections, no pressure, but of course you'd be first up if you have something. And if you would, please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Maricel Hernandez. I'm the chairwoman of the Chicago Board of Elections. Thank you so much for your insight. It's really great. But I think many of you hit at the heart, I think, of the problem. At the Board of Elections, both county and the city, we try to make voting as accessible as possible. We have ballots in many different languages. We go out to the media, you know, to try to get everyone out to vote, especially in the black and brown communities, right? But after all these years, I keep wondering why voter turnout is lower than it should be. And I agree completely with you. It's not anything that the boards of elections can accomplish alone. First and foremost, there has to be some kind of conversation at the family level. Mm. Secondly, there has to be education in our schools. We have to find a way to motivate our younger people, especially, to come out and vote. And, you know, we try to connect with a lot of not-for-profits and organizations to do that. But I'm still at a loss to get that connection. And I'm wondering, you know, what can we do? What else can we do to motivate and get everyone out to vote, especially our young people?
I'll start, if that's okay. Chairwoman, thank you for that concern. As you know, that's a concern we all share. And especially, you know, I think that we have a slightly, we have a slightly higher turnout when it's a gubernatorial or presidential election. But when you're talking about a consolidated election, you're looking at a 20% versus a 70% voter rate. And that's something that keeps us all up at night when we're dealing with voting. So some of the things, you know, we constantly rack our brains. We think, okay, let's go to these think tanks. Let's have these partnerships, and which we will continue to do. We'll continue to develop the partnerships like we have with Carolina, like we have with the NAACP. But in addition to that, I know one of the main themes across this panel today was civic engagement. And I think that's critical. And as the panelists stated, especially, and I know Representative Maurice West stated, getting these babies interested in participating in a voting process. How do we do that? And I think everybody can pull together ideas. One of the things that we had the most amount of election judges that we've ever had is we reached out to different organizations. We put out cool little kind of like voter cartoons and comic strips and stuff to get them involved, because when they get involved and become an election judge, they're more interested. We also have a pilot program with high schools to try to increase voter participation and civic engagement, as well as the community colleges. So I think it's something we're going to have to work together to adopt new ideas and strategies across the board to really get these young people from the start and build these partnerships within the schools to have more civic participation. I'm a member of a Divine Nine organization, Delta Sigma Theta, and I'm also a member of Links Incorporated. And through those organizations, we have different programming where we've been able to have, you know, increase the civic engagement amongst the participants of our program to know from early on how important this is. But like, one program isn't going to solve this dilemma. We got to be continuous. We got to be diligent. We got to be intentional in making sure that institutions, educational institutions, all types of institutions understand how they have to incorporate civic engagement to increase participation in their curriculums. And I'm sorry, I'll open it up to others, but I wanted to address what I thought was this common theme amongst the panelists.
Clerk Gordon, if you don't mind me piggyback on what you said, and I caveat any legislative ideas, I have to talk with the Board of Elections and the county clerk. So what I'm about to say, I haven't talked to them yet. So I'm just going to throw it out there and see what happens. I remember this past election. I am at the October, you know, November is when our election is. And then the consolidated election is circulating their petitions. And I'm like, what are you doing out on these streets when I'm trying to finish my race? We have accessibility and voter security, but now we're promoting voter confusion. Chicago is the third largest city in our nation. Do you not know that we're the only city, the only state that has our people come out and vote in negative degree weather in February and April? Everyone else is either in the summertime or in November. I want to start the conversation on if we move the consolidated election from the wintertime and put it in months that which people are able to go down these streets without ice on the sidewalk and falling on their, you know, and hurting themselves, or having the desire to want to be engaged, because the last thing you want to do when you're cold is go out in these streets. And so we need to start having conversation, because if you look at the history of why it's February and April, it started with Dad Daley. And I don't know if there was some political motive behind that, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was. We should have conversations. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but we should at least have conversations about moving those.
Hey, as a candidate, I love that June 28th primary we had.
That was nice, wasn't it?
Let's have that conversation here at City Club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So one thing I'll add is you have to meet people where they are. The average American household does not even subscribe to cable. The average elections office does not have marketing dollars to send stuff, to send a mailer, right? I have to commend you all for actually doing a podcast, right? It's something that you could put while you're walking the dog or walking the kids to school. Like, people's attention are really small. And on partnerships, there's a difference between when I put something on social media and when your local sports affiliate or Beyonce retweets that message, reshares that message. Boy, your problems with poll worker recruitment or notoriety, just knowing the dates, they just have a different reach. So in terms of partnerships, I think that's something that I'm really excited about Cook County and beyond. It's how do we get people who have their own following uplift our message? And I really think that you just have to meet people where they are, whether it's at the barbershop or on a YouTube ad. Like, you just have to meet people where they are. And it's not TV.
I got a question. How many of you put your seatbelt on your way here? Why did you do it?
Because the law.
Because if, well, it's the law.
I want to live.
But if you get in an accident, you didn't want to go flying over the seat or into the windshield. Two things. The reason we wear seatbelts now is because we have been inundated with that message when they first became necessary, a part of the cars. Folks didn't wear them as much, but you hammered it home to children. You hammered it home to adults. We saw billboards. But the other thing we did, we told people what was in it for them. Mm. I think that's what we have to do with voting.
I'd just like to add an initiative that the state conference of the NAACP here in Illinois have put together a voter registration plan that we will be rolling out to all of our D9 organization. By the way, I'm an Omega man. To our D9 organizations and other community-based organization. Also, the NAACP, you know, we are a volunteer-driven organization. But we have not only our branches across the state, but each branch also have what we call our youth council. Then we have our college chapters. And so it's an attempt to your question about how can we increase the voter registration and the increase of people coming out on Election Day. That's the our intent. With our college chapter, particularly in Kankakee County, with our youth council, if we can do STEM, if we can provide monies regarding financial literacy, which kids are really into now, you know, because, again, my dad didn't, you know, talk to me about the Wall Street Journal or stocks and bonds, but our young people are there now. And so once we get them to really truly understand the importance of registration and voting, and so it has to start, one, home, organizations, okay, the churches, and our schools to get there, and hopefully we'll get there. Thank you.
Thanks. We could talk about this all day. We'll have
more
to come back.
Club discussion.
We'll have to come back and do it again.
Yes.
Special. Thank you to all of you. Thank you so much. What a great conversation. As I mentioned, Representative, we are committed to having these discussions here at City Club, and I would like to maybe we specifically have a program on the timing of that election that might be interesting to an awful lot of people.
I'll
right?
come back down for it.
Okay, great. Well, we appreciate you coming here. Appreciate all of you, your expertise, your history, and the future of what you're going to bring to our great city and our great state. Madam Clerk, thank you so much for
thank
your
you.
Partnership in this and for your public service. For leading a great conversation. You're always welcome back, as are all of you. As I mentioned, we've got an incredible January and February already lined up. There are QR codes on your seats, on your tables with those programs. So please come back. But in the meantime, enjoy your holiday season, enjoy your families, and hopefully enjoy this beautiful, wonderful city that we all live in. So thanks for being here at City Club.
Thank you,
thanks, Clerk Gordon, and to all of you. Have a great day.